discussion with this title. Now, he also mentioned that there's a subtitle, and the subtitle is effective field theory. And maybe break out of effective field theory. So, so in effect, generativity and quantum field theory, they are effective field theories, and you get to see what happens. So, one question that I would bring up is, are non-localities crucial for seeing an output resolution? So far, there's nothing that connects with UV infrared. But you see, effective field theory, at least in the way that I understand it, you have explicit violation of UV infrared because you impose an overall cutoff. So this is a connection between effective field theory and UV IR. Because we heard this afternoon that the causal set theory is non-local, so we could ask the question, what is the status of non-locality? In approaches to quantum gravity, other approaches to quantum gravity. So these are two questions, and Laurent won't be satisfied yet with this list of questions. So I'll come to questions which you'll probably be participating in asking. So let's turn now to the IRUV coupling.
The different from UV-IR coupling is a...
Yes, it's different. So the question I was, is this crucial for singularity resolution? So in principle, you see it's non-locality without infrared ultraviolet correspondence. Could that be important for singularity resolution, or is this correspondence crucial? Now, I will especially look at your signatures of the IRUV coupling. Are there signatures as opposed to just being able to argue that you can resolve singularity? And again, the question is, what is the status of the IR UV correspondence in quantum gravity models? So this would be my list of questions to start out the discussion. So I'm looking at if there's anyone who wants to start out. Because otherwise I will call on people. And I will not make the age, I will not call on people by age, but more on particular elements.
Yeah, I was just going to say, this may not be obvious, but what Samir talked about yesterday, this issue of tunneling from classical states or semi-classical states to fuzzball states, which happen as you get close to forming a horizon, I would put it in this category that it is a type of IR UV coupling, or this for singularity resolution. And I do wonder whether, I know Samir likes locality, but also he likes tunneling. So, but it seems like a contradiction to me that you cannot like both of them. I guess you can like both of them at the same time, but I think they are inconsistent with each other. So that's, I would like to hear his opinion on that, and of course everyone else's.
Okay, should I comment on that? Yeah, so I think of tunneling actually as completely local. So let me put it the following way. If you actually write the wave function of something, let's say even in quantum mechanics or quantum field theory, you have some wave function, it's localized in some place, and then it spreads out. Tunneling just means that, you know, there's a potential barrier, but the wave function, of course, keeps evolving even under barriers. But there is no tunneling in quantum field theory or even in quantum gravity, which violates causality. So, for example, if you even want to do something as weird as bubble nucleation with all the, you know, quantum gravity things in it, the bubble wall doesn't travel faster than the speed of light, either in the frame of the bubble, the inside metric, or in the frame as seen from outside. So we have actually never seen a violation of causality in tunneling. It's just a wave function, which is just leaking at some rate, but it never goes faster than light.
Yeah. So, but I mean, you're still thinking about a semi-classical picture, and I mean the bubble while you're talking about, you're talking about an instanton, which is analytically continued. But the real, the real Hilbert space is a space of field configurations. And when we talk about tunneling in second quantization, you're thinking about one field configuration tunneling to another field configuration. And these are very different configurations, very different manifolds. And it's not quite clear to me how you want to define locality when you want to tunnel from one manifold to another manifold, because they're very different configuration spaces. Yeah. So what is locality then?
So first of all, I was thinking exactly the way you were saying. I am thinking in the fully quantum gravity terms and Lorentzian, not semi-classical and not instantons, and looking at the entire wave function of everything. And then the statement would be that firstly, you should take something which has a light construct. Let's take, suppose you're in Minkowski space, but fully everything quantum, state string theory or something. There is, suppose I know that by doing some kind of local process, I can make it more likely that a bubble of nothing will form. A bubble of nothing has a compact circle. And if I squeeze that circle, then the bubble can form more easily, right? Because I'm squeezing it to zero size, what starts the bubble. So suppose I say I want to start a bubble of nothing at your location, and I want to do it. I can send a pulse to you, which squeezes the circle like this. When it reaches you, a bubble will start and then expand. There's nothing I can do to get a bubble of nothing start at your location and come to me. Anything in the full quantum gravity theory, which will take less time than the speed of light to go from here to there and come back. That's for the state. So there is nothing non-local about it. Turning still respects all speed of light issues. Once you look at light construct, you're both in the initial space and the final space. We have never been able to find any example where it's actually valid. So it's all local physics. So tunneling is just happening because local things do something.
Yes, I'm a little bit confused about the real definition of non-locality, because I think in the first talk about causal set theory, it was clearly said that there's no problem with causality and the speed of light, but it was talking about non-locality in a different sense. So I don't know if what you're saying now, that you don't have information traveling faster than the speed of light, is that if that really means that it's not non-local.
So again, I think Fay made it very clear that non-locality is completely consistent with causality.
Yes.
In this framework. This,
yes.
I put a check mark here.
Exactly, so I don't understand the argument now saying there's no travel faster than the speed of light, so it is local.
Well, it's kind of also relating to, I think, that non-locality is not a very well-defined concept.
Well, let me try to define it for this purposes.
Yeah,
because I think if we...
No, it's just, well, let me also be specific about that, because in causal set theory, the non-locality of the action is forced on, because you want to have Lorentz invariance. And that is related to the problem of how do you find non-locality in terms of, for instance, if you do translate difference operators in differential operators, then you know you have a difference operator, you can kind of try to expand it in differential operators, get infinitely many derivatives. So what should I call non-local? But because of a similar reason, I would also say in LQG we are forced to have a non-local action eventually if you want to preserve diffeomorphism symmetry. Then again there's a question, should you see that as non-local effectively on in the continuum? So I have this bit of this question.
So what's your understanding of non-local? How do you define it?
I mean, if I technically define it as there's inverse derivatives in the action, or infinitely many derivatives in the action, I have the difficulty in defining it for a discrete theory, where you know if I take a so-called perfect action, I do have like couplings which are infinitely far away. Okay, they're exponentially decaying, but they reproduce exactly the continuum physics, which is supposed to be local. So I have a bit of this issue.
It's necessary and sufficient that it to be non-local to have grad to the negative p in the action.
But for the continuum, yeah. Then basically it's a question whether in the discrete you have to say, okay, you possibly have non-local, I mean, couplings between very far away building blocks which are not exponentially decaying or something, and it's not very clear what kind of condition I have to add for these couplings to define a physical notice, I mean something a noticeable non-locality.
Okay, so I've taken the time here to fill in what you said, Bianca. Okay, and I'll take my liberty to fill in the technique here. And you see, I put my personal definition of non-locality here. You see, there's a connection with effective field theory. So, if you have a theory that cannot be written as an effective field theory across the space-time, then that would be, for me, the working definition of non-locality. And so, if you have a theory based on strings, obviously this cannot be written as an effective field theory, because you're missing the extended nature of the string. But now, the problem is, so far, this is blank.
Yeah, I want to fill that problem. So for me, it's clear that, okay, and maybe we can add other line about, I don't know, asymptotic safety. But it's true that, and some people can try. So it's clear that string theory has UVIR mixing, right? Loop quantum gravity, in my understanding, does not. It's kind of a UV regulated theory.
Okay,
but maybe we need to have other people.
Yeah.
That's.
Yeah,
Well, I do think there's a space for non-linearity. I have not thought whether that has an IR implication.
This is
not obvious. I mean, it's not obvious to me to exclude it.
But it's not really present in the current. I wish it was obvious in our understanding, but it's fair to say it is.
It's your theory, you could do whatever you want with it.
No, because there's a sense of, well, it's not necessarily my theory, but there's a sense of action, and then, you know, whether it follows from this principle. Or, you know, the quantization of Germany, it's not, I wish there was a clear cut connection, and I believe in some sense there should be, that once you have a quantum geometry, then there's necessarily a UBI or mixing. But I've never seen that argument made, you know, compellingly, and maybe someone could one day do it, but at this stage, right?
You asked me to put asymptotic safety in. Ask it is not clear, but is someone else working on asymptotic safety? Yeah, because my guess, I have not studied asymptotic safety, but my guess is that this is an attempt to do something local.
I'd say local, and it has IRUV. It's not non-local, but it has IRUV.
But it's not non-local, it has...
Yeah, because you're trying to connect what goes on at low energies up to high energies and getting all the couplings to converge. When it has gravity, I'm less familiar. Without gravity, you're trying to get all the particle couplings to converge at a particular value that is determined in part by what they're doing in the IR. And probably, I think the same thing happens. I'd rather Astrid were here to comment on the gravity part. But.
Now, there's also something here. So we heard that causal set theory is non-local. But that, in the talks, I have not seen any for that dialogue. So, is there something?
Well, yeah, the last talk, I mean, was an example of how UV fluctuations basically in a causal set structure lead to an IR cosmological constant. I don't know if they lead to it. Hypothesized to.
But is that enough to put the technology on?
I would think so.
Is the speaker not here? Do you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I agree that that's an example, but again, it's open to interpretation if someone thinks so that it's an example.
I wanted to maybe challenge you, Robert. What would you say, according to your definition of non-locality, what would be the difference between that and non-perturbativity?
So, okay, that's good. So you're challenging.
So I wonder if you have a theory which is at low energies is perturbative, and you go to a regime where the effective field theory breaks down, but in principle, if you could sum up all of the terms that you expect in the effective field theory and have a full non-perturbative theory, would that be
okay,
a complete theory? And in what sense in that case would it be non-local?
Right, so if you start with the perturbative theory, which is an effective field theory, and then you try to complete it, and you get something with these kind of terms, then it would be non-local according to your definition.
But, okay, maybe, because I think in algebraic quantum field theory, you know, they have a definition of what it is to be non-perturbative quantum field theory, and it still has a feature, which is essentially there's a common feature to any theory, perturbative or non-perturbative, is the universality of the vacua in the deep UV. So every state, if you go at high energy enough, it doesn't matter. You just recover the usual Adamar states, right? So in that sense, that's the kind of a universal sign of being an effective field theory. There's no, it's like ultraviolet science. Is that?
What is m to the fourth there? I got.
Sorry, I cut you off.
I was just saying that I wouldn't be that comfortable with putting string theory in the non-local category in the following sense. That strings are long floppy objects, so we agree that you can't make an effective field theory point like that, so that's completely agreed. But there is still something very causal about strings that you can't send a signal along a string faster than the speed of light.
But I think we've all agreed that non-local doesn't mean non-causal.
Mm-hmm.
We've
so no signal is faster than light. Okay, that's important.
It's causal.
It doesn't necessarily mean non-causal. It might.
I mean, I'm just saying there's also, in AQFT, they have a technical definition of what it means to be non-local, which is that they call it the theory being split. So it's the following thing. Suppose that you look at an algebra of observable where there are two open sets that are separated by an epsilon neighborhood. And the question is whether you can split the algebra of observable and you can split the Hilbert space, right? And there's a theorem that says that if your theory is in, so in local field theory, well, you know, the theories are split. And if you have an infinite number of higher spin field, like in string, then the theories are not split. Okay. So that would be, so higher spin, I mean, and string theory is kind of a even more elaborate example than the theory which has higher spin. So, okay, here it refers to some space-time, yeah, and some localization. So can you localize the operator of the union of two opposite sets as the tensor product of the algebra of operator or not?
Yeah.
It's technically maybe a bit hard to apply to gravity. But
no, no, I mean,
how do you localize? I mean, as a start, how do you localize observables in a given set?
I mean, no, we can't. I mean, if you, anyway, we could. Yeah.
I mean, that's the main problem for observables.
I think we're entering this. No, if you define this edge mode, like you have a field that defines where this boundary of the region is, you can do that. It's this, yeah. You just look at the support of gauge invariant observable in one region and the other, and you ask whether.
So regarding non-local and acausal, what guarantees that a non-local theory respects causality? I mean, we say, you know, CST, okay, it's non-local, but it respects causality, but there are clearly theories that don't. So what's the constraint? There's got to be some constraint or theorem or something that ensures a non-local theory is causal. Anybody? I don't know what it is. Does it?
I think that's, you know, I would have said Poisson brackets.
Commutators respecting
you have to
deltas or something? I don't know. I really don't know.
With Piaget's brackets? Yeah, with commutators.
How do we know how to address the question in a particular field?
Yeah.
I mean, isn't it a particular theory?
Well,
I could ask the question, but in general, I don't know. But maybe somewhere else now.
Is it the commutators should vanish outside the electron?
Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. Is it something like that? Or
I mean, gravity you have to define it's outside, you know, on the given state.
Uh-huh. With quantum gravity, we don't know what the light cone is.
Yeah, so on a given state, on a given phase space point, I mean, classically you can at least formulate it. On a given phase space point, you
yeah.
can calculate what is your light cone, and then you can make this condition classically. It vanishes outside the light cone, which I did at some point, so
yeah.
I can give you a reference. And on a quantum state,
yeah, how do you,
you have to kind of define what is your fuzzy light cone kind of to make sense out of it.
But I mean, that kind of tells me that since you cannot define a sharp light cone, then you cannot define locality. Or causality, actually. But
that's the problem with
yeah.
quantum gravity. To
yeah.
quantize the theory, you need to know the light cone, but to know the light cone, you need to quantize the theory.
Yeah.
That's a big problem.
There's other definitions of microcausality and quantum gravity, which are non-perturbative, which is in your path integral, do you sum only over configuration with a regular light cone structure? And include exclude topology change, for instance, you know, which indeed in it could also in spin forms include topology change or impose this condition on having a regular light cone structure.
That's a very
that is not looking at the outcome, but yeah. it's an input in some sense. It's a very different definition
mm-hmm.
of what some people sometimes call microcausality.
I mean, I think that's very different from like microcausality in field theory.
So, I want to add something that I guess I think is implicitly there as a philosophical issue. So we observe locality in basic physics at the scales we have, but we don't like it because it gives singularity. So non-locality is a kind of cure for this. It spreads out singularities, okay. But we don't like it at large scales because we don't see it. However, if that really is fundamental physics, you imagine some fundamental theory early in the universe, it's non-local, what stops the non-locality from evolving all over God's half acre, right? I mean, everything, right? We don't want it to happen, but implicitly means, this is where the philosophy comes in, I think. We're telling our theories, you're not allowed to be non-local above a certain scale, but that's because we want it that way. It's not necessarily because fundamental physics requires it. Now, am I screwing something up here philosophically, or what would you guys say? Or,
so I added one point to these questions. This is what you said.
I think you're completely right.
Yeah, I don't see any way out of this, right? I mean, it's empirically motivated, but it isn't, at a fundamental physics level, I don't see anything that forces its requirement.
It is an ungranted extrapolation.
Yes, exactly, I would say.
Sorry, which is an ungranted extrapolation?
That we have to get rid of non-locality at large scales. But if you like a multiverse, which I don't, then all over the multiverse there should be non-local physics at all kinds of large scales doing crazy stuff. And then we have the anthropic problem. Why aren't these evil things invading our universe? And again, we have to put a fence around it, say they're not allowed to get in here.
Well, maybe we can postpone that question just a bit, because you see, instead of asking your question for non-locality, I'm going to sort of ask your question, first of all, for if or about the one. And go on.
Okay.
I'm calling on you.
To comment on that, okay. If I try to summarize, so here we had this discussion of non-locality in the context of a given space-time, and then, you know, it's the question of Bianca, what do you do in full quantum gravity? So it seems to me, there seems to be an agreement that quantum gravity, when space-time is not even part of the picture, then by definition it's kind of non-local, or we are not local, or we don't even know how to grasp it. Is that some kind of agreement, right? We can define non-locality in a given field in a space, and then there's quantum gravity which replaces that. Now, I think I would say that this is maybe what you just say is maybe one of the motivation. You know, when I was looking for some kind of a compelling argument, then that's maybe one of the main motivation, that if there is some kind of a UV you know, non-locality, I mean UV cutoff, then it does creep up in the infrared, and it has to, and this is maybe the hope and the witness. So let me give you an example in context where we know that, which is the case of condensed matter system. But in condensed matter system, all the infrared phenomena that we witness are the expression of some microscopic structure. So like in the sense that, you know, I'm always giving the same example, water boils because it's made of molecules, the sky is blue because it's an infrared structure, etc., etc. So the transport property of infrared observable are, as we know, as we develop the theory, are linked to somehow fundamental structures about the vacuum. So there, you know, there it's due to the fact that somehow in condensed matter we have something which is completely contradictory to EFT. In EFT, I'm saying what happens is that the EFT postulate that there's a unique vacuum. It's always the same vacuum, right? It's completely, that's what EFT means. It's the Lorentz invariant Adamar state, which is unique, and there's nothing to be seen. So in condensed matter, it's very different because nobody, you know, we have this infrared structure and we have this this large-scale phenomena. It's not maybe, it's a first form of infrared reality, but maybe I can, you know, UV RF mixing, which by that I mean existence of long-range observable whose existence can only be justified because there's a fundamental cutoff.
Yeah, one question I would have is whether in the way we set up the discussion, non-locality and IR UV are not dangerously close together, because given that there is the definition, or we have the definition, non-locality is not an EFT, it seems that an EFT also, if there is an EFT, it would generate problems for IR UV. So there may be, and that would also be a question about asymptotic safety, whether in asymptotic safety it's actually justified to fully endorse that it is, there is IRUV in there.
That's my question. I cannot see how you can have the UV-IR button.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It seems to be, it may conflate to my question.
I would agree. So, I mean, I was just putting in what you all said, so I added a question mark here.
I mean, isn't there two different notions of IR, UV?
Yeah, we should clarify what's meant by
the normalization flow is a standard. I mean, that applies to every theory and it connects UV and infrared. Is that what we say is a coupling? I mean, I saw infrared UV coupling is something stronger than the normalization flow.
Yeah.
So maybe I can precise. For me, the EFT, there's two universals hypotheses. There's a universality of the Hadamard vacua. And there is the Wilsonian renormalization flow, which clearly states that there is complete decoupling between UV and IR. That is, I can do physics at one scale independently of knowing the physics at the other scale. That's one of the tenets of the RG flow, right? So the RG flow postulates, by definition, if you have a theory where the RG flow is true, it means there's a clear hierarchy between UV and IR. You can do quantum biology without knowing cosmology or without knowing particle physics, right? So, if you want to go, I can give you an example where UVR mixing is built in the effective description. It's in string theory. Where there, you have a symmetry which is T-duality. So here it means that for every excitation of momenta P, if you want, there is this or a length scale R, there's a similar excitation, and you cannot excite one object without exciting the other of length scale 1/R. If you look at what it means from the point of view of the RG flow, it means it breaks every axiom of the Wilsonian RG postulate, right? So it means that the RG, the Wilsonian picture that you can separate scale, it's at least it's good philosophically to know that it's not something that you have to submit absolutely. Because here what you have is that it's a theory which at the same time that you flow towards the IR, you flow towards the UV, and then there's a scale, which is this cellular scale, which is a scale of... So you cannot distinguish... So if you flow towards the UV, that is, you make degrees of freedom disappear, then you have to make degrees of freedom reappear in the IR. There's no other way than that. So that's an example. Maybe there's it's very crisp there.
So do you agree with how I try to summarize what you said? Well, there's sort of two notions of IRUV links. One is simply that the infrared affects the ultraviolet, and that's not the UV affects infrared, and the other one is actually the IRUV. In one case, it's possible with something, in the other case, it's definitely not with something. And string theory would be a case of V.
Yeah, so I don't think, except maybe for gravity, I'm not sure, but asymptotic safety doesn't have the notion of B. I think it's Wilsonian. But I was thinking more of A in that regard, right?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Okay, so let's put it here. This would be A, not B. Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably true.
Well, I would think so. You can't invert a causal set, unless our whole universe is a causal point in a multiverse.
So you're saying?
I think all series except for string series are A.
I think that's probably right. Yeah.
At least every series is at least A.
Everything is A except string theory.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's obvious. This for causal set, So,
what's the duality in a causal set?
No, but I don't think duality is one example where you have non Wilsonian behavior. But the main issue with defining UV and IR, I think the main issue, and it's why it's related to non locality, is that can you even define UV and IR in a crisp way? So, is there a clear definition of what's UV and what's IR? And if you have Minkowski spacetime, that's clear. You have long wavelength and short wavelength, high momentum and low momentum. But if you have, if you don't have even geometry, like, which you don't have in causal sets, then what is UV and what is IR?
if you cannot define those sharply, then...
No, but Niyesh, I don't get it. I mean, this is what I tried to ask Faye. At some point, we have geometry. So if causal set never gives it to us, causal set's wrong, because I can measure the length between me and Samir. And that's a very well-defined,
well,
large-scale concept.
You think you can measure, but then Samir might make a measurement, and everybody else may make a different measurement. And so you think there is a geometry that emerges, but that could be very much observer-dependent. And
a lot of observers would agree in this room, I bet. I just don't understand it. If it's not recovering the large-scale geometry we see, I just don't get it.
Maybe you should interrupt this specific discussion. And now I think I do want to look at the younger people in the room and ask them if they have any questions. And you know, okay.
There was this question raised about the definition of causality in quantum gravity. You wrote it somewhere. We're not discussing twister theory, and I don't know much, but I think the idea is that we work with null rays rather than with space-time points, and quantization is done of the null rays rather than space-time points. If we have a theory of quantum gravity, I think it becomes important to discuss this notion. Yes.
Does anyone want to comment on this? So the challenge is, I guess what you're saying is you want to see the notion of causality made more precise.
Mm-hmm. This is in the context of twister theory, is that what
mm-hmm.
Okay, right, because it's that raised.
Like fixing causality by fixing the light cone structure and...
I can just comment. It's true that twister theory is interesting because it defines causality as locality in twister space. Yeah. That's kind of a, right? That's the transfusion. So, okay, but that's more of, it's more of a technical point, I guess.
Well, I always think of ADS-CFT as like a version of twister theory, this, at least in a sort of spiritual sense. That, because the dual theory, the conformal compactification of the whole space-time, is where the basic ingredients of the theory live. And I would say, as it stands today, we understand the CFT better than the bulk quantum gravity, and it might even be, this came up earlier in the meeting, whether or not there really is a duality, or is it more like quantum gravity in that setup is the CFT, and it's partially expressible in terms of geometry and the bulk and string theory and whatever, but that's always going to be an approximate description. So if we take that viewpoint, then it seems like it's telling us, it's addressing exactly this question of what is causality from the bulk viewpoint in that version of quantum gravity, and what's locality? So the answer would be, it isn't completely local. It's not even possible to define causal structure sharply in the theory, in the bulk. And so it's just sort of, but we can fall back in that case on the boundary where those notions are sharp, but that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about the bulk viewpoint from the viewpoint of holography. So the answer would be, causal structure in space-time, local causal structure ceases to be meaningful in some settings and for some questions.
But I think you're making a very general statement. You're saying in holography, holography contradicts causality in bulk. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, like it seems to tell. I'm just saying, suppose the world is described exactly by this ADS-5 process, by whatever, some specific, and that the real definition of the theory is the CFT.
Mm-hmm.
Then it seems like it's telling us that bulk causality is only an approximate notion,
mm-hmm.
and even the bulk light cone is only an approximate notion. And that's sort of how quantum gravity ends up delocalizing. Actually, maybe I can connect it to the question about singularities also. Because if it's true that it's doing that, that theory should also tell us, okay, well, what happens
in the bulk at a space-time singularity. So is that non-locality that is implied by maybe a CFT? We're going to resolve the singularity inside of a black hole. And in what way? It seems like plausible that it could, because it's actually dissolving the notion of the local causal structure in some regimes. Presumably near a singularity would be a good candidate for a regime where it does that. And I don't know if this is worth commenting, but my own personal psychology actually was changed by this holographic picture of black holes, which is to say that I used to think, kind of along the lines of causal set philosophy, that the causal ordering in space-time is the primary, is like more basic than anything else. So when you approach a singularity inside a black hole, a space-like singularity in your future, you don't have any choice but to keep going into the future. And therefore, you know, you have to hit something that you have to describe as a space-time singularity. I mean, maybe it resolves through a phase that's not like semi-classical space-time, but you would keep going. But the picture that's suggested in ADS-CFT is actually that you don't keep going. There's nothing there, which seemed really, really, really disturbing to me initially and for much of the time I thought about it. But I guess I've started to get used to the idea. I can imagine space-time inside the black hole literally just ends. And if you think about the a picture of how it could end, actually, I even have a picture of that now. Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, you can foliate the inside of a black hole by constant, if it's a Schwarzschild solution, by constant R surfaces. They have a spherical cross-section, and then they're really long, actually infinitely long as you go towards the singularity. And as you move towards the singularity, towards the future, the cross-sectional area of that tube shrinks and shrinks, gets smaller and smaller. So it's kind of completely plausible that if I were watching space-time going towards the future in a tube-shaped geometry where the tube is shrinking smaller and smaller and smaller, I would just imagine it would sort of go poof at the end and just end. There would be no more space to go into the future. So it's not like there's a problem not being able to continue because there's nothing to continue in. Like, let's say when it gets down to the Planck length, you know, then it just dissolves. There's no more space. So that seems like a possible concept of that's kind of concrete, that's suggested to me by holography. I mean, we don't know at all. We don't even know how to check a hypothesis that it works that way within. But I think it might be possible in the future to develop the technology within holography to check that. I don't know how, but maybe it's possible.
Maybe I just make a comment on this and then say something about the question on causality in space-time. If you take this picture that it became very thin and then went poof, it was just space, it can go poof, that's fine. But then you get back into the information puzzle, because in this picture, all the stuff that you threw in the past and all the entangled pins, so they're all sitting on that long slice.
Read my paper.
And so it goes, okay, I should.
It's always available at infinity. You never lost any information. It's like Dorothy in the Wizard of Oz.
Okay, I agree.
It's an island. I mean, isn't your thing like your island philosophy? But people call it now islands. You're saying all the information, everything inside has a copy of it outside, so that's okay.
The island story was emphasizing a page curve, and I'm saying there's no page curve, the entropy is always zero.
Okay.
I'm going to address this question tomorrow morning in my talk. So. Yeah, and I will talk about this question.
Just wonder, can you transpose the proof to cosmology? Can we come out of the proof?
Keep
answering
that.
The proof
has a
logical model.
I have to deflect the question. So, okay, so let me help. So you have a contracting universe.
Mm-hmm.
So the Ohm's question is, what is here?
Yeah. Actually, that's the final state. Yeah, I don't know if anybody's heard of this Horowitz-Baldacena final state proposal and to address the black hole group issue puzzle, which is that the quantum state of space-time at a future singularity inside the black hole is actually somehow projected onto a unique final state by the nature of quantum gravity. And I think they said that you can think of it like the time reverse of the Hartle-Hawking no-boundary proposal for cosmology. So it could be that, like, just in the sense that we could imagine the universe coming out of nothing in a Hartle-Hawking type no-boundary wave function, we could think of it as going into nothing at a final singularity inside a black hole. And in that sense, I would say, yeah, maybe the two proofs could be related.
Sorry, but then you need to have entropy, so there's no entropy, or there's no degrees of freedom, or you say the entropy is zero then in that case.
Yeah.
So where are we? Like, where are the numbers of degrees of freedom that populate the universe?
Well, if we probe a subsystem of the universe, then we have only access to some of it, so we have a...
So it's basically
like an entanglement entropy in our region.
So in that sense, okay, in that sense, there's kind of a UVR mixing. It has to be that in every local subsystem, there's a duplicate somewhere on the purification of the state.
Yeah.
Right? So in that sense, there's this duality. Okay, that's very close. Okay, but that, okay.
But, this is
but then if you have access to the entire universe, there's no degrees of freedom. I mean,
yeah.
Okay.
Just a,
that's very radical. Okay, that's
the unique quantum state of the universe.
There's only one state.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it has to be though.
And then we only exist because we create what is it, the mathematical construction where you purify, you know, you have the GNS doublet. Right? That's the picture.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. With the algebra we have access to, we construct the Hilbert space.
Okay, so then it's like a quantum mechanical version of T-duality. Every local excitation there needs to have this infrared energy.
Okay.
That's very
so I see a couple of people. Okay, Carl, did you want to say something?
Can you bring down the blackboard that you erased with the previous proof?
Yeah,
no, the one with the proof, the blackboard.
In the middle.
The horizon there, it's an event horizon, and if there is a Hawking radiation, it's supposed to shrink and get to zero in a finite advance of time. So that cannot be compatible with the Hawking radiation. If you want a proof, you have to go to the standard. That's right?
That sounds like, I mean, probing the idea will probably take us a field, what's it called? My quick answer is I don't see a problem with the Hawking radiation going poof along with everything else. The Hawking partners.
But is that the conformal diagram that you expect, or is the one that Hawking drew originally?
What's the difference?
The diagram that Hawking drew originally says after the...
Oh, I see, a future outside me.
There is another R equals zero part of the...
That's right. No, I would expect that.
So it's not this one?
Yeah, yes.
Okay.
You're saying it could... So you're talking about the case... This could be for an eternal black hole.
Yeah.
But if it's evaporating,
yeah,
I agree there's a future region.
Yeah.
Not past the singularity, but on the right.
But, yeah. Then
okay.
I think if we want to believe this, we have to understand what is the physics at the end of evaporation.
Mm-hmm. Maybe this question we should postpone for tomorrow because
yeah,
you're going to talk about your picture tomorrow.
Yeah, we're going to talk about this question.
Because I do see some people looking at their watches, and you see those of you who know me know well that I won't stop without people. This thing's a homework problem. So you see, there's one question here which we have not addressed.
Yes.
And it's this question here.
I just wanted to say a word about that. So which is because you asked me about UVR mixing. So there's another aspect of UVR mixing is that imagine that there's no UVR mixing. Then John Moffat is not here. Because here, when people start to talk about quantum gravity, we have the usual discussion about what happens in the deep UV when it goes poof or not, etc. But you know, John keeps asking, well, who cares, right? In the sense, if, and maybe it goes back to the question of Rob, if the non-locality of quantum gravity is located only to Planck scale, I mean, there's a very convincing argument that we will never, ever detect it, right? So for me, UVR mixing is almost, a necessity as a practitioner, that if it's not there, then I need to do something else, right? So I'm not pretending about signature UVR mixing, but I feel if that, you can convince UVR good that it's not there, then I think you should stop, I would stop working in quantum gravity, because rationally I don't see how I would expect any signature frame. Maybe it's too radical, but...
But so that's what, in the context of a quantum gravity model, it has UVIR coupling. And so my challenge to the students is to show that the signature is not energy. So dark energy is not a cosmological constant. Forget about that. Because then you're into the transparency problem. Dark energy is not a scalar field. It's a scalar field. You can do anything you want, you can go blind anything. So let's hope that dark energy is not a scalar field. Okay, so show this. And I think you'll sympathize with this. So.
And by tomorrow, this time?
No, for those of you who are PhD students, you have a year to work on this.
Or ask ChatGPT if you want it done.
Okay, so can we?
And then we can adjourn. So just a couple of points. We have the community night downstairs at PI. The PI community is there, so you're welcome to join them if you want to see the rest of PI. And we resume tomorrow at 9 a.m., I believe, right, with Carlos Park. So let's thank Robert and everyone else.